In this hour of the show, we'll be talking about electricity industry deregulation here in the state of Illinois, something that is underway right now. In 1997, a law was passed known as the Electric Service Customer Choice and Rate Relief Law. And probably for consumers, the most significant feature was that power consumers would be able to choose their source, their supplier. The big users, the industrial users, got to go first. They started, some of them started to make that choice, or that choice started to be open to them in, I believe, in 1999. That continues. In May of next year, 2002, residential customers may choose. So we thought it might be a good idea at this point to talk a little bit about where we are in this process. Also, just because it has been said that the power problems they're having in California have something to do with deregulation in that state, which might make people a little bit nervous here in the state of Illinois. So we thought, well, perhaps we ought to look at some of these issues. And we have as our guest this morning, George Gross. He is one of the folks at the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here on the U of I campus. He's also a professor in the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering. And we've discussed this topic with him before. He's been good enough to come back and spend some more time with us to talk a little bit about electric utility deregulation. And if folks who are listening have questions, you're certainly welcome to call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us. If it would be long-distance call for you, use the toll-free line, 800-222-9455. So, again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. That's what you get. You match the numbers and letters. Toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much for inviting me back again.
Once again. We are, again, maybe we ought to just talk a little bit about where we now are in this process. For some time now, some industrial users have had the option of choosing their supplier. And that started in, correct me if I'm wrong about this, in 1999, that's when that began?
Correct. It's October 1, 1999, where some of the large industrial users were allowed to basically make the choice of who would as their electricity supplier be. And we have an example here in our backyard. For example, ADM chose a different supplier than Illinois Power in terms of getting its electricity.
One of the things that I was interested in is how much switching there has been. It's sort of my understanding that there hasn't been a lot of switching, and that this also parallels the experiences of other states where there was that opportunity. People seem to be a little hesitant about changing from one supplier to another.
I think that's absolutely correct, and there are a few reasons for that. But in California, where we have the most, let's say, egregious example of restructuring and its impact, altogether, up to last year, I don't think we've had more than 200,000 customers switch their service from their utility, so to speak, to whoever they chose to have supply from. And this is going to be a long-term process. Don't forget, we're now in 2001. AT&T was broken up by Judge Bell in 1984, so we're 17 years after that. And it took a good 15 years till our dinners would be interrupted by calls from various companies to switch our long-distance carrier. So it's going to be an education and all experience in terms of letting people know what it means. And by and large, people are not that upset in terms of the service they typically get with their electric utility. I don't think it's necessarily the same as with the telephone company. So there is a kind of comfort which exists.
Mm. Well, you think then the reluctance, at least to this point, the reluctance to change has been based on individuals' concerns about stability. They want to make sure that they have the supply. They probably would say themselves, well, the supplier that I have now does fine. Why should I change and take the chance, perhaps, that there might be some sort of problem?
That's definitely one of the issues. It's difficult to have much faith in terms of calling an 800 number which a distributor is going to give you. Where all they have is an electronic messaging system, nobody to talk to. These utilities, which are in existence, have put in the infrastructure. They have the customer service troubleshooting units. And if you go to one of these units and look at them, they can immediately pinpoint where the troubles exist. To build up those kind of infrastructural support, it's going to take a long while. And people will ask questions. Who do they call when the power goes out?
Hmm. I'm not sure when we had this first had our first conversation on the subject. I know it's been quite a few years. At the time, I'm sure that 2002 seemed a long way away. Now we're just talking about, well, a little bit more than a year that residential customers will be able to make the choice. At what point do you think that we'll start to become aware of this, or potential providers will start to try and make sure that we are aware of them?
Maybe in about 6-7 years from now. I don't think we'll see any kind of major shifting come May 2002. People will have the right, and some people may exercise it. But by and large, I don't think there's going to be a huge refuge from the current customer, from the current provider to some other providers. One of the reasons is that the rates will not necessarily go down, because there's some transition charges which may be in effect as far as 2008. So there won't be any kind of sizable savings that a customer may be able to accrue out of switching to a different supplier.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a good point, and something for people to understand, that as the way the legislation was written, there was a provision put in there to try to protect companies that had made investments. We can argue about whether they were good or bad investments, perhaps, if, for example, building nuclear power plants, that when it came time to switch, if you switch off your existing provider, you are, in a sense, rebating some of your savings to them over a period of time, over a number of years. Eventually, that will stop. But that's something, I guess, to consider when making comparisons about rates.
Correct. I mean, those are the stranded costs, and they're in competitive transition charges, which are going to be imputed to every customer, whether they switch or not. So because of those charges, switching is not really going to be any panacea, at least not in the short run.
Yeah. So do you know of any companies that you think will start to aggressively at least try to solicit business starting next year? Will there be people calling us on the telephone as other service providers do, saying, how'd you like to switch to a different power company?
I think it's going to be more at the commercial level as opposed to the residential level. The residential level is very expensive to supply, so consequently it's much less likely. Eventually there will be, and there are reports now that even co-ops are trying to go into this business in terms of becoming alternate retail energy, electricity providers, suppliers, ARIS, as they're called in the state. But that's not where the real business is. The real business is trying to get some of the refineries, trying to get some of the large industrial plants, because those are big loads.
Hmm. And we talked about the fact that the big users, commercial users, have had the opportunity now for some time to switch. We talked about the experience in California. I just want to make sure you gave a number, and I want to make sure, were we talking there about California, or do we know, I ask the question straightforward, here in the state of Illinois, how many commercial users have changed to another?
I don't know that number, but it's relatively small.
Okay. We have a couple of callers here. Our guest is George Gross, professor in the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at University of Illinois, also from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, one of the many policy analysts there. And we're talking about deregulation of the electric industry in Illinois. If you have questions, you can call us. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, so that if it would be long-distance call, use that number, 800-222-9455. First caller in line here is on our toll-free line, number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I work for a coal-fired utility plant in central Illinois. And we crank out electricity at a very economical rate. But all these people I see jumping in building power plants are building gas-fired turbines. Now, gas is an extremely expensive way to produce electricity. It's quick and easy to build, but those costs are going to be passed along in the form of bid and ask whenever they're on the open market. When the price soars, these gas units are going to crank on. When the price is low, they're going to buy coal-fired and traditional generation. How is this going to affect the market? And the other part of my question is, also you're talking about, what you're talking about is a middleman buying electricity from a power plant and selling it to a retail customer or an industrial user. Aren't you adding some more people in there? Isn't the cost actually going to go up for the residential customer? Isn't it basically a situation where a large industrial customers will get the lion's share of the benefit, and the residential customer is going to pay out the nose for electricity? I'll hang up and listen to your guest comment on that.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, your first question was in terms of gas-fired generation versus coal-fired. And coal-fired, yes, is very, very inexpensive. You have some old units all over the Midwest, and they're producing some of the cheapest energies that we have. Of course, you know that we have some problems in terms of the pollution and the emissions from those plants, and those have some costs associated with them. The push to gas came in the late 80s, early 90s, where we had this so-called five-year gas bubble, which is now just bursting. And gas is a deregulated product, and it has been very, very cheap. 2 years ago, basically both gas and oil went down to such an extent that people just stopped drilling. And now we are starting to feel the effects of that, because lack of drilling 2 years ago and the fact that we're having a very cold winter has pushed gas prices up to unseen level heretofore. In terms of the question about the middleman, there's always transaction costs associated in any kind of business that we're doing. The mere fact that it would be a broker or a marketer in between, that doesn't have to raise costs because there are economies of scale that can be realized. So that's not a big issue. In fact, all of our distribution systems that we see here in terms of the way we get the goods that we buy typically go through middlemen. They don't go from the factory directly to Sears or to Penny's. They go through a middleman. So I won't worry about that. And in terms of what is going to be the impact, there are always social engineering aspects associated with this issue, and those are legislated, as we saw here. Everybody in the state of Illinois who are customers of Illinois Power and ComEd got a 15% discount in terms of the electricity rates after the law was signed by Governor Edgar and went into effect, and there'll be another 5% next year. So those are legislated movements, and those rates are still going to have a lot of supervision, and let's put it this way, maybe less control, but a lot of supervision by the state. I don't think that the residential customers are necessarily going to get the raw end of this.
Let's go to another caller, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this competitive distribution of power that you're talking about has got to be accomplished without separate power transmission lines for each power company. So there's got to be some technology which allows each power company to feed electricity into common transmission lines. So my question is, how does each power company know just exactly how much power to feed into the common transmission lines to satisfy their customers and not provide power that the customers of other power companies are using?
Okay, I think this is a good question, and basically you're asking how this is done in the real world. This is not something new, because utilities always used to trade among themselves, but they were the big boys. So what we have now, we have a certain smaller entrepreneurs who have opened up business as generators. And they have a contract, and their contract says that at 11 o'clock, they are selling 100 megawatts to a particular load, and that load could be another utility or it could be just an industrial customer. And basically, at 11 o'clock, they will have ramped up all the generation, so there are 100 megawatts online. It's not necessarily true that the 100 megawatts this guy is putting in is going to get to the customer. And there's basically, we cannot in any way check which electron gets to your house or to my house. But basically, in terms of supply and demand, this is the way it's being done. And the system, through various laws of physics, basically takes care of ensuring that the supply and demand stay in balance.
So they virtually, apparently, they know about how much electricity they're, each power company knows how much electricity its customers are going to use, approximately how much, and it contracts for that amount. Is that basically the way that...
Basically, that's correct. They have a load forecast, and they have the generators ready, and they can be raised up in terms of generation or lowered down. It's a very complicated engineering task to do this particular round the clock, but we know how to do that, and we've been doing it for many, many years.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thanks. The one of the things that's happened is that we have moved from the old way the utilities were structured as regulated monopolies, so that basically you had no choice, first of all. Whatever the power company was the power company. And it was likely that they generated the power. They had the transmission lines. They maintained the lines. If there was some kind of problem when it came to your house, they were the ones that you called to fix it. They were the ones that took care of the billing. That one company did all these things. Now there is the possibility that all of these various functions could be carried out by different companies. One company could be the generator. One company could be the distributor. One company could deal with service sorts of issues. Has, in fact, that happened here in the state of Illinois? Have we started to see the old sort of monolithic system break down, and we do indeed have separate entities handling all these different functions?
The answer to your question is yes and no. It's interesting. It hasn't happened to the extent, saying in California, but yes, it has happened. But on the way to this happening and becoming much more widespread, first of all the companies got sold. Mm-hmm. And every utility company that used to exist here in the state has new owners, by and large, every investor-owned utility. So Central Illinois Public Service became part of Ameren, as the Ameren Corporation, which owns it. Illinois Power became Illinova first, and then it was sold to Dynegy, one of the names often mentioned among the profiteering generators in California. We have Commonwealth Edison, which was sold to PECO, and they have now what's called the Exelon Corporation. And as the industry is moving, there's a lot of this breakup of the vertical integrations that we saw. So there'll be parts of the company which are going to be totally doing transmission. There'll be parts of the company which are basically in customer service distribution type of activities. And there are others which want to do generation. And the synergy which was there in terms of PECO, which is Philadelphia Electric Company, merging with ComEd, was that they had nuclear. They were very interested in getting the nuclear plants here in Illinois. And you should be aware that all the nuclear plants which are still operating in Illinois are operating very well. There is now a clearly aligned profit motive. Those units have been cleaned up. Their management is much, much stronger. And that electricity is coming out and basically supplying electricity to more than 50% of the load in Illinois is served by nuclear.
Is it the case, do I remember correctly, that the state of Illinois has more nuclear generation than any other state?
That's correct. Plants? That's correct. Mm-hmm.
We have other callers here. Let's go again to our line number four. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
I had to leave the radio, so maybe somebody's asked this question. I live in southwest Indiana, and we had the Marble Hill fiasco. You remember?
Yes.
And so that went down the drain. But within the last 2 years, we have like two or three proposed gas fire generating plants costing millions and millions and millions of dollars to construct. How can they afford to do that? And this is only for peak generation, you know, power supply. Do you understand that question?
Yes, I think it's a very good question. And your question is essentially about the speakers which are coming up. Well, if you recall, about 2 summers ago, in summer of 1998, we had some price spikes where utilities were paying as much as $7,500 per megawatt hour. When you see those kind of figures, and people feel, well, it won't be that high, but maybe it will get to the level where, which we see in California now, around 1,000 or even around 300. With those kind of figures, you can go to the banker and show kind of revenues you could get. And all these plants typically sign some kind of contracts with some loads in terms of having some stream of revenues. And they do this as speculative ventures. They get money from the bank, and they pay back their loans. And so I think we'll see more and more of this because there is a lot of money to be made in this area. If you look at the revenues which some of these independent generators are showing in the last few quarters, they're really very, very healthy revenues.
That's incredible. Who regulates the prices these guys charge, though?
Now, this is a market. This is a market. And basically, there's a buyer and there's a seller. And whatever the market will take, sometimes it's too much generation. And there were times in California, certain hours, when the price of electricity was zero. And basically, everybody wanted to stay online, generate, not to incur the cost of turning down their power. So they were willing to sell it for nothing just to be allowed not to turn down the generator. So it's a market, and sometimes dislocations do happen. We have scarcity rents sometimes where in certain hour, if a nuclear unit happens to go offline, then we're tight for power, and the suppliers will sense that, will charge more for the power. But this is a market. Just like when you want to go and get into the Super Bowl, let's say, for Sunday, I think some of the people will be paying way, way over the face value of the ticket, because there's a scarcity in terms of how many tickets are available.
This don't look good to the future to me.
Oh, I think the future will be okay. What we're seeing is that along the way, there's going to be some accidents. But in terms of the long run, I think the answer is not to turn back to what we had before. The answer is to correct the problems that we've seen with deregulation. And California, for us, is a wonderful, wonderful test case from which we can learn a tremendous amount.
I hope we do learn. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call. We're here at about our midpoint. And once again, I'd like to introduce our guest. We're speaking with George Gross from the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs. He's also a professor in the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering. We're talking about utility electric industry deregulation in the state of Illinois and what that means for people here in this state. And questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll free 800-222-WILL. Since we here touched on the California experience, I have a couple of callers. I hope they won't mind waiting in here a minute or two so that we can talk a little bit more about that. The problems that we have seen in California, the supply problems, are those indeed due to the way deregulation was handled in that state?
Certainly, to some extent. Very difficult to do things halfway, and very difficult to do restructuring when you allow the wholesale prices to go to market levels, yet you restrict the retail prices. And I've lived in Italy last year for a year. In Italy, there's a law which says that you have each bakery must have a certain kind of bread, which is very, very cheap. Doesn't matter what hour I went to what bakery, they never had that bread. On the other hand, they had all kinds of breads which were at a much higher price. So when the utilities are restricted in terms of what they can charge for that electricity, scarcity will happen. We have the utilities on the brink of bankruptcy. I think that those issues will be solved. But worse, we're experiencing problems in California in times when we shouldn't. This is a season which is off-peak. The loads are considerably lower. We're talking about 30,000 megawatts of load versus over 45,000 in the summer when we really have the peak demand in California. So it's strange in terms of what's happening. But it's also, you should realize, it's very much a buyer's market. Those utilities that have to buy in California, they don't have much of a choice because the generators can sell the power, if not in California, outside it, where people are willing to pay those kind of high prices. And California is not an island. It's much easier to do a restructuring in a place like England and Wales, which is an island. It's much easier to do it in Hawaii. It's very difficult in California, which is part of the Western system. So there have been quite a few mistakes, which is easy to identify or could have been easy to identify even years ago. The problem is that we have an elephant designed by a committee, and it doesn't necessarily work very well. Mm.
And do we have any reason, based on the California experience, to be concerned here?
Well, we have a reason to be concerned, but I think the Midwest is different. The restructuring in Illinois is different. We don't have the kind of market design that was put into place in California. Also, I must say that I'm very pleased to see that we're starting to construct some power plants. We completed 2 years ago 176 megawatts at Tilton, which are gas-fired units, which came in very useful 2 years ago and also last summer. There's going to be this big plant in Sydney, plant in Piatt County, which is going to operate somewhere between 300 and 500 megawatts. This is all good news because one of the things that's also clearly visible in California, notwithstanding the other problems, nothing was built in the last 10 years. So you restructure, you deregulate when there is some surplus or some abundant electricity, and you ride on its coattails, and you rode very well for 2 years, but it came home to roost. So here we're building, and we have to build, because if we're not going to build, we have a lot of old plant, which is not only not efficient, but it's also a polluting plant. So it's good news that we're building. I think the area which is of some concern is more the Chicago area, where it's much more difficult to build some of these plants because of this NIMBYism, not in my backyard syndrome. California has gone a little bit overboard. It has been called now a banana state, which is build absolutely nothing near anyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have other callers. Let's continue to talk with them and go next to line one. Hello.
Yes, I have a couple of points to make. Number one, let's start with the California problem you just talked with. California has a unique problem in that the consumers there decided they were going to deregulate. And they got together with the legislature. And the legislature got together with the power plants, power companies, namely Pacific Gas and Electric. Now, Pacific Gas and Electric controlled all of Northern California when it comes to electricity. And they set the rates that they were going to pay at $750 per megawatt. And they thought that was so outlandish that nobody would ever get to that price. And then they set the height that they could charge people at a price that they thought nobody would ever get to that high because there would never be that kind of abundance of electricity. Well, once they stopped building the power plants and once that the independent generators started generating, they realized that they were short on power, and they started pushing the price up higher and higher and higher. Now Pacific Gas and Electric actually subsidizes a lot of the customers in Northern California because they have to pay the difference between what they get from the company and what they have to charge the generators. So now they're going bankrupt, and they're not at all happy about it, and they're not going to generate as much electricity from the plants that they own, which are mostly hydroelectric, and a few nuclear plants. So, you know, I really don't feel a bit sorry for Pacific Gas and Electric. They made their own bed, and now they got to live in it. You know, it's just tough luck for them. Admittedly, the people who are in California are not very happy about that. Well, they're going to have to work their way out of it. But to get to another point that you brought up earlier was the nuclear generation. And it seems to me everybody's been screaming so much that we don't need nuclear power. Well, that's not true. Nuclear power is probably the power we need in the future because it doesn't generate greenhouse gases. It produces power very cheaply after you once get the plant built. But building a plant is expensive, I have to admit. The Europeans have done a much better job in it, that they've used a slightly different system that's not so expensive to build. And they've done a very good job in that area, and they don't seem to have near the kind of problems we do. Can I get your comments on that, sir?
Okay, let me first of all clarify certain issues. PG&E was one of the players when restructuring was done in California. There were a lot of stakeholders at the table. And no doubt about it, there's a lot of problems. PG&E never set the price. The promise in California was that these utilities were told that they have to sell their generators. So they have very little generation left. They do still have the hydro. But those generators which are charging all those high prices, those generators are producing power in units which PG&E and Southern Cal Edison owned before they had to sell those plants. So that's number one. The $750 you're talking about, that was a price cap which was set by the ISO in the wholesale markets. The retail side was frozen as part of the law, AB 1890, which was signed by Governor Pete Wilson in 1996. On the nuclear issue, I'm not sure that Europe has a much better experience than we do. Certainly in France, where it's heavily subsidized by the government, there is tremendous amount of nuclear generation, and they've done it very well. But there are moratoriums all around. Sweden wants to shut down all the nuclear plants. Germany just passed a referendum to shut down the nuclear plants. So there, I don't think those are necessarily examples that we want to emulate. The issue of building nuclear power is still alive, but I think nobody is going to run on that kind of a ticket that they want to turn the country back to build nuclear power. There is an emotional discomfort with building nuclear, but I think eventually it may come out to be as one of the options that we have. We'll just have to see.
I see. Even though we may be much more discomfortable in a very hot environment with very nasty weather and unhealthy for all life forms.
Well, we're experiencing what that means today on the campus of the University of Illinois in terms of not having electricity.
Yes.
I think there will be some trade-offs which we'll have to make, and some of them are going to be in terms of psychological discomfort. Some of them are going to be in terms of the environment, and the population or the voters will have to choose that. But there will be trade-offs. There's no free lunch.
That's exactly right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for the call. I'm curious. The caller made reference to the fact that it's expensive to build a nuclear plant. It's also expensive when the plants come to the end of their life to shut them down, generally known as a decommissioning. I'm just curious, how many plants have been decommissioned, and is that a large expense that awaits us in this country?
Actually, for decommissioning, you pay all along the way the decommissioning charge, which is put in the rate base. So that's being assessed throughout the life of the plant. And we paid for some of the decommissioning costs associated with Clinton here in the Illinois power area. It's very expensive to build nuclear, but in effect, nobody's really thinking about it. People are talking about it. And As a guy who's head of General Electric Nuclear, he says that he doesn't exactly take his order book when he goes to talk to people. But it's of current interest because it's still an option, and I don't think we should shut it out.
All right. Well, the lines are full here. We have several folks. We'll try to accommodate everyone. We'll go next to line two. Hello.
Yeah, a comment and a question. My comment is, to my knowledge, this whole thing about electrical production, energy production being put into a market is not quite as settled as you would let us believe, you know, even by your own admission, you know, a true market would require easy entrance into the market, and the whole issue about building plants is quite a difficult economic choice. But my question is, Eastern Illinois is very proud of its electrical production plant, and as I recall, they've got some way of, I think they use coal, and they've got some way of getting rid of the waste and of scrubbing their emissions, I think is the correct term. And I was just wondering, why isn't, if that's true, why isn't that much more common type of plant, if you're familiar with Eastern Illinois' power prop plant?
I'm not familiar. Do you mean the Eastern Illinois University?
Yeah, right.
Okay, well, that's a small cogeneration plant, which is there probably, and also providing steam for the campus, not only electricity, and then they sell their excess electricity or power to the grid. Typically, if I guess you're in Illinois power area, then it's Illinois Power which would be buying that generation. People are not building very much coal because of the emission problems. That's the reason. The emission problems are very expensive, and it's much cheaper, much cleaner, much better alternative, natural gas. And eventually the price of natural gas will come down. With this high prices that we're experiencing today, we've started a lot of drilling, and in a couple of years, there's a delay here. You have to be aware of it, that it's not going to be instantaneous. It takes time to drill for gas. In 2-3 years, we'll see the prices come down again. But this is an example, I think it's a very good example, where the free market is working. And regulation would not solve this problem. In fact, regulation is what caused the high prices to start with. And when we got rid of regulation, there was competition. It drove the prices down. So I'm not in favor of regulation. Besides, market can react much, much more quickly and rapidly to events than regulation can. So regulation is not the answer.
Well, I kind of disagree, but my point about Eastern was that they apparently have, Eastern Illinois University apparently has, very, very low emissions. In fact, I think I read, and maybe you know something about this, that the greatest pollution we have in Illinois is really from some plant in Iowa someplace. And in particular, dioxin pollution from some plant in Iowa, I've read. But anyway, thank you.
All right, thanks. Illinois does have significant coal resources. The problem is that it's high sulfur, and when you burn it, you have the emissions issue. We've been here in this state, and I'm sure other places, they've been working on clean coal technology for, I don't know, how long? Is that such a difficult technological issue to solve?
It's pretty difficult, and we did hear it as part of Bush's plans that he wants to energize that program, the clean coal technology. But there are quite a few research projects going on, but also they've suffered in terms of how much funding they've had in the last few years. So we've had kind of a turndown in terms of activities. You know, many of these issues are solvable once there is enough interest and there's enough money. We haven't been doing that much work because the funding was just not there.
About 10 minutes left. Our guest, George Gross, is professor of electrical and computer engineering at the U of I, also involved with the Institute for Government and Public Affairs. We're talking about electric industry deregulation and what it means here in the state of Illinois. We have several callers. We'll see if we can get everybody in the time that remains. We'll go next to line number 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I'm a rural customer of the Eastern Illini Electric Cooperative, southeast of Champaign, and I had a couple of questions. They've for several years offered a residential interruptible rate, which I've signed up for, that allows them to shut me down on peak days, which has, you know, never been a problem. I have an automatic backup system, and it's only been for, you know, a few afternoons in the summer. But now I'm reading about people who've signed up for those contracts in California, finding themselves shut down for weeks on end. What do you think is the likelihood of that, of those sort of peak days occurring much more frequently in Illinois over the next few years? And would I be wise to get off this rate while I can?
Well, it depends in terms of whether we are building or not. And if you're building, we're okay. If you're not building, then this is a law of physics, basically. Supply has to equal to demand, and some of the demand may not be satisfied. But in California, for a long time, there have been customers. Take Miller Brewing Company, which in the first 5 years of its interruptible rate was not shut down even once. And last week, they basically had to close a plant east of Los Angeles because of the number of interruptions. You're striking a bargain with the utility. The utility is willing to sell you power for less for a certain price. But they haven't been shut down for weeks, basically, because there's a clause in terms of number of interruptions which are permissible under this rate.
Right. Which actually, what I'm worried about is I don't think that my contract has that limit in it. But
well, I think it's worthwhile to check because you certainly don't want to be on a contract where basically the utility can shut you down without any limit. But of course, you have to realize that for the utility, it's not advantageous to shut you down because when they do shut you down, they can't collect any money from you.
Right. Yeah, so I had a related question, which is that my co-op seems to be fairly adventurous in terms of entering other businesses. They, you know, sell satellite TVs and God only knows what else. Are there dangers for them getting into the generation business, and, you know, how are they likely to get themselves in trouble with deregulation trying to, you know, play the market or whatever? What should I be
the
looking for in
there? Diversification you're talking about has nothing really to do with deregulation or restructuring. Happened way before that. Your co-op probably is no better, no worse off than some of the utility companies. The famous story in the utility business is that of Florida Progress, which is a utility company in Tampa, and it decided that it's going to diversify. So it said it's going to diversify into life insurance, and it bought this life insurance company because it said we have all these captive customers that we have. They didn't realize that most of the customers are over 65, so it was very difficult to sell them life insurance, and soon they lost their shirt on that business. So if they know what they're doing, then your co-op is okay. If they don't, then they could lose their shirt on it also.
Okay, and then my final question is, you mentioned all these new power plants that are being built, almost all of which are natural gas-powered. And do you think that the increase in natural gas supply over the next couple of years is really going to be enough, given that there's also huge numbers of new gas-powered plants being built all over the country? And, you know, they're saying in California now that natural gas shortage is really more of a problem than the electrical shortage.
I think that's a correct statement, your last statement. Yes, I think this is something that's going to respond to the price. And we also saw that we responded to it in November, when there was a lot of fuel switching with the price of natural gas going up. We switched the power plants to power plants which could run on other fuel. So eventually there is going to be this equilibrium which is going to be met. The high prices are giving an incentive for investment to go out there and to drill for new gas. And we'll get that.
There'll be enough new gas to supply all of the new power plants.
I think in the foreseeable future, I would say yes, and we're also developing other sources.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Let's go to line number one next. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. I'm curious. We're talking about the natural gas. Don't they stockpile the natural gas? Because, the last couple of winters have been, warmer winters on record, and now you're indicating that there's a shortage because they stopped drilling.
Okay. It's possible to store natural gas, unlike electricity. And what you do is you compress it and you store it typically underground. It's also true that we've had milder winters. That was another reason that people were not drilling, because the price was low. Plus, not all the gas was used. This year, the December was so low that it's supposedly the coldest December in 106 years since we collected the weather data. And the amount of demand that we had on gas increased by more than the annual consumption of the Scandinavian countries. So it was a big jump in demand.
And you also indicated there was other sources. What were those?
Well, we're working on alternate resources. We're working on biomass. We're working on photovoltaic. We're working on wind resources. Those are all possibilities.
So you're not talking about alternate sources of natural gas. You're talking about other...
Other energy sources.
Other energy sources. Okay. One more here. We'll go to line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Why don't they build the coal-fired generators near the coal mines where the coal is produced? Wouldn't that be cheaper and send the electricity out?
Well, that's a good question, and that's the way we used to do it in the old days, where it was easy to build next to a coal plant. The siting of a power plant is very difficult. It also has to do with the transmission capability. So, because not all of that power would be utilized at the source.
Are there a lot of byproducts from coal-fired plants like, I understand the wallboard that they use is made out of what's captured out of the stack. Is that right?
Well, we have fly ash, which we use for paving roads.
How about nylon and aspirin and things like that? Wasn't that made from gas originally?
From oil originally, yes.
Well, in Chicago, it used to be people's gas, light, and coke.
Right.
They've dropped the coke off of there. What are these peaker plants? Are they very small, or could you describe one of those?
They're not very small. They're typically modular, so you can make them as large as you like, say in 50 megawatt modules, and they would not be used around the clock like baseloaded plants. Oh. They would be used in times of peak load, so that's why they're called peakers.
Is it like the size of a small building, or they seem to resist those?
No, those are large industrial plants. Uh-huh. Typically, they use the same kind of machinery as the jets that we see, the jet engines, so the combustion turbines.
We're going to have to finish there with the promise, I'm sure, that we'll be back on some of these issues again soon. But for the moment, we'll have to say thanks to our guest, George Gross, from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at U of I, also a professor in the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering. Thank you.
Thank you very much.